Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, inviting you in for some conversation on this Tuesday. Coming up, a visit with Crystal Worrell. She'll talk about her new mural of Elizabeth Paradovich. A backstory that's sure to enhance your appreciation of this piece of art as you walk by. Also, an artist from Gustavus packed up quite a bit of his work on the ferry to Juneau. We'll talk about his upcoming exhibit at V's Cellar Door. And a chance to find out about the local candidates for the Assembly and School Board. Now the forecast, and just remember, I'm only the messenger, but it looks like we're going to have wet weather through the week and into the weekend. Rain showers for tonight, lows around 50 degrees, northeast winds around 10 miles per hour. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thanks for lending your ears to our program. Hope everyone had a restful Labor Day weekend. For one Juno artist, Crystal Worrell, it was definitely a well-deserved rest. She had spent the week before putting up a giant-sized mural in honor of the Thlinkit civil rights leader, Elizabeth Paradovich. In a rain-soaked forecast, it was unclear if she would beat the rain. On Wednesday, September 1st, just as the light began to fade, the last panel was rolled into place on the south wall of the downtown Juno Library. A group of dancers and drummers gathered to welcome the portrait of Paradovich, who fought for passage of the landmark Anti-Discrimination Act in 1945. The crowd cheered loudly for the artist, Crystal Worrell.
Thank you, Crystal!
Thanks to 3 days of rare sunny weather, Worrell had won her race against the rain and finally realized her dream of telling Paradovich's story on a grand scale. Worrell, who is of Thlinkit and Athabascan heritage, did not stop to speak to the crowd. The artist only waved briefly from a forklift, then continued to put finishing touches on the mural. Jamie Ann Hasselquist, a native rights activist, says Worrell's portrait of Paradovich, framed by a golden orb and bold blue Thlinkit form line designs, speaks for itself.
A beacon of strength and hope for our people to know that we have a strong voice just like she does. And she's going to be greeting all of those cruise ships in, and every one of those people are going to have to start learning about who Elizabeth Paradovich is.
As for the mural, like every piece of art, it has a story, one that Crystal Worrell shared with me over the weekend, one of her first chances to reflect on a project that occupied the better part of her life for the last few years. So let's start at the very beginning of this story. What sparked this idea for a mural? Do you remember the moment?
Actually, it was about 3 years ago. My good friend Pat Race, who runs the AK Robotics comic book shop in Juneau, we used to be his neighbor. Trickster Company used to be downtown. And he approached me and was like, "Hey, Crystal, I really like your artwork. And, you know, I really want to see more murals by local artists downtown Juneau. I also think there should be a public art piece that's to commemorate Elizabeth Paradovich. How do you feel about doing a project like that? I can help you in any way possible." It's like, wow, I'm honored that you asked me, and I'm also glad that you asked Thlinkit woman that's from her clan. And Pat's just been one of the many incredible people that has really helped this project happen.
You and your brother, Rico, work closely together. Did he offer any inspiration for you?
Absolutely. My brother, Rico, is the one that got me into public art because he had worked super hard to make those form line components that are built on Front Street. He helped design form line and these salmon that are going throughout the streets that are really beautiful. And I just remember, gosh, he did that so while ago, and I remember his struggles and the things he was doing, but when it was done, it was just this moment of pride for us and being Thlinkit people from Juneau. watching him. He's kind of just been this guide for me. He started Trickster Company. He's truly the mastermind behind it. And he brought me in and I was like, okay, this is really wonderful. And so he did the same thing with public art. And now I'm hooked and I'm in it. It's quite exhausting, but it's needed. I think it's necessary. It's important. I really am looking forward to seeing more local artists and Native artists step up to the plate and start pushing their way into public art. I only hope that this mural is starting the trend. I hope it's just the very beginning.
So what went through your mind as you thought about a mural for Elizabeth Paratovich?
My mentor, Robert Davidson, which at the time I was doing a part-time apprenticeship with him in Vancouver, BC. I had been training with him for 3 years off and on, and he really taught me this amazing trick to being a successful artist or human being. He said the power of visualization, visualizing your end product or your final piece, giving it power to the point where you know that you want it and what it looks like, visualizing it, and that you know you're going to do whatever it takes to get the job done and do it right. So having learned that amazing tool from Robert, I applied it to this, and I'm such a visual person as is, and I've been really wanting to be a muralist and work in public art, but I knew it would take some time for me to get my foot in the door. There's not a lot of representation of Indigenous local artists in Juneau, and in Alaska, there's not enough of local Indigenous artists in public art. It's very hard to work in public art, especially as an Indigenous person. There's very poor, little to no acknowledgement of Indigenous people, the local Indigenous people in current public art. So there's a multitude of things I wanted to see change, and I wanted to really push and make a platform for Native artists in Alaska to step up to the plate. But I knew it would be like an uphill battle, so I just stuck to that visualizing tool.
Using that technique of visualization, what came to mind? Because there is really, in the end product, more than just an image there.
Yeah. So Pat had originally said that we should try that wall that's by the Rockwell building by Deccan Daves. So I walked to the wall and I looked at it and just visualized. All I could see was just a burst of colors and her portrait and how I could really just amplify and complement her beauty and who she is and how she symbolizes. She's an icon for empowerment. And there's 1,000 ways I could think of creating this image of her. There's an old photograph of her that I found. You Google Elizabeth Paratovich, it's the one photo, the black and white one, where she's wearing this button-up floral-like tee, and her hair is all up and curled in this really cool updo. So I wanted to use that image, but superimpose over it my illustrations. So it's still that original image, but I wanted to make it look like it matched the artwork that's behind her. I put her in a blouse that's still this button up floral pattern tee, but I actually use Rico's pattern, which is floral patterns that are based on Athabascan beadwork patterns. And then there's a form line salmon that's jumping in and out of the flowers. And then I also put a pair of his silver baleen earrings on her as well. I just kind of like imagine what would she wear in the modern day, or if I were to make an outfit for her. I had really fun with that part, which is kind of fun at being in fashion and in apparel design, that I really had fun with that, but really trying to stick to keeping her, the likeliness of her image and her time.
Well, you mentioned the location that you went in the area where Deccan Daves is now and kind of tried to visualize the mural going up there, but ultimately it faces the back end of the library and the garage, which faces the cruise ships that come in and all the tourists. Why did you choose that location ultimately? Did it speak to you in some way?
Yeah, so the initial idea was that Rockwell building, but the building is so old and falling apart. If you look at the wall, there's lead in it and the repair for it is just so beyond what I as an artist could pay for or be willing to fundraise for in addition to the art. So we started looking at a plan B. What was our plan B? And my friend had suggested the library building, and I just thought that would be incredible to have my artwork on the library because of all the resources and information about Elizabeth Pradovich in the library. I also love that it's facing the water. And when you look at that wall, there's the mountains behind it. It's framed beautifully. The shape of the wall is also longer, whereas the other wall is more square. I feel that a portraiture fits better in a longer space because there's more components you can wrap around the figure and the portrait. Whereas if it was a square, it would have been very limiting. The design would have been completely different. It's interesting that it's facing where the cruise ships come, is it's welcoming all of these visitors. It's very visible. You could see it from Douglas. You could see it from the tram. I love that it brings color and brightens up downtown Juneau. And I think it's great that it's welcoming visitors, because I don't feel like the artwork that is welcoming visitors represent local Indigenous people or acknowledge the Aucoin people in our land. So I feel very proud that it's there to welcome visitors. And it's also on the dock, which a lot of locals walk up and down. And a lot of local people live up Thane, so people will drive past it every day. I live downtown, so as a downtown person, I would see it every day when I do my dock walks. You know, I really am looking forward to that area being developed. I really want to see it be local businesses and local shops thriving there. And I hope that that artwork drives more people to support local businesses and authentic Indigenous art.
So let's roll the clock back to when Pat Race approached you with the idea and you started trying on designs for size. Were there many drafts of your initial mural?
Yeah, there is quite a bit of drafts and quite a bit of challenges. One of the interesting things was I was actually trying to do this project with another artist. Her name's Lauren Brevner, and she's based in Vancouver, BC. She does a lot of public art. She does a lot of large scale murals of portraitures in downtown Vancouver. And she specializes in portraiture of women of color that are iconic figures, warriors, leaders. I don't specialize in portraiture. I'm new to murals. I've done murals before, but smaller and in other countries, so still very new to it. And so I wanted to loop someone in that had experience and that I felt would parallel with me and my vision. And so her and I worked together for over a year on the project and created multiple drafts going back and forth. She guided me in so many ways, what to look out for, safety equipment, working with the city, the weather, the timing, like there's so many facets that happen when you create a mural. And it was really great to have her experience. I'm bummed that it couldn't happen. It couldn't continue to work with her because of COVID. The Canadian borders were shut. So we decided that there would be a future time and a future project that her and I could work on together in the end. And this one was not it, but she has been an essential guide for me in stepping into this field of murals. So I'm grateful for Lauren Brevner. And so that influenced my direction with the art. She did sketches of Elizabeth and her sitting to like the left and having the artwork sort of like the raven and the salmon facing outward from her. So like there's this energy coming out from the center of her outward. So that was Lauren's idea. And I kind of projected from that. That's where the final design is rooted from. And my part is where I was specializing in the form line components and the patterns that are in her blouse and the sockeye design and the raven design that's behind her. If you look at a lot of Lauren Brevner's work, she puts a circle behind the figure's head. It's like usually a gold sun or a silver moon. And I loved that idea because it just kind of really makes the person glow and makes them look like this amazing, powerful being, which she is. So I used that idea as well. And Lauren was incredibly supportive in guiding me in so many ways, including the design.
That mural does radiate something. And I don't know if it's totally due to the gold orb behind her. How did that happen?
One of my specialties is color. One of my favorite classes in college was color theory. I really dove into it. I nerd out, I geek out over color. If you look at a lot of the products I designed on Trickster Company, you can kind of tell which ones I designed because they're just super poppin' with color, very vibrant. Whereas Rico's is more like nonchalant, monochromatic. He's got more of a different vibe going on with color, which is great because ironically, I like to wear black and white. So I wear his patterns and his colors more than I wear my own. But when I'm working and creating, I love to use really bright popping colors. When I went to college, I went to get my BFA in Studio Arts from the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. And I got to meet a lot of other artists, including international artists that were creating art. I started studying Japanese pop art, and it's just so crazy. It's like very bright colors that pop out. And I was like, whoa, I was trying to visualize form line being crazy and having neon colors that contrast and are really bright and almost kind of blind you when you look at them. So since then, I've been exploring with color. That's sort of become my, I guess, one of my signatures is color.
When we come back, more about what went into Juno's newest piece of public art. Crystal Worrell says, yes, she had a hand in it, but so did many others. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. And here is more of my conversation with Crystal Worrell. In our last segment, we talked about what lit her fire to put up a giant mural of Elizabeth Paratovich in downtown Juneau. How her vision of honoring the Thlinkit civil rights activist with her art finally came to fruition, a daunting task for anyone at any age. So, how old are you, may I ask?
I'm 33.
Ah, you look much younger than you are. I wouldn't have thought you were 33 years old, but to be so young and to take something that is basically a concept and turn it into community art is huge. Some people never do anything like that in a lifetime.
Yeah, I'm just super proud that I have a supportive clan and a supportive family and a supportive community. I have really wonderful people around me that have always believed in me. And from a young age, you know, my grandma loves to tell this story of when I was 3 years old.
You're talking about Rosita Worrell?
Yeah, that's my grandma. She's been an incredible role model. Her and my mother, my aunt, my stepmom, my other grandma, Alice Dementiff, have been just incredible role models. Very, very lucky I was born into this life where I have amazing, powerful, strong, hardworking women that taught me and expected from me to carry myself a certain way. I was told you have to go to college, but you can choose wherever you want to go and you can study whatever you want to do. But it's really important our people get an education and get trained. And now to this day, I understand that. And especially working in public art, I realize that being trained and getting trained helps you understand what you need to do and that you don't necessarily need to understand all the terminology, but have a vision and be able to explain it and lay it out and create visuals.
I interrupted you when you were talking about your grandmother, Rosita Worrell, noticing that you were a handful and we didn't hear the rest of that story.
Oh yeah, my grandma loves to tell this story. When I was a three-year-old, I was a handful and I'd be running around crazy with my hair all over the place. She said the one thing that would stop and get my attention was bright, bold colors. I would stop everything, drop everything and just stop and stare for up to a minute at anything that had super contrasting colors or visuals. She said from a very young age, she knew I was going to be an artist.
Wow. Once the design was completed, you figured out what you wanted to do. There is the matter of getting the design to the wall. So what was your next step?
If I could, I would just focus on the art. And I think this project has been a good learning lesson for me to realize I don't really want to be a project manager again. But doing this project required me to take it upon myself to do the fundraising, the planning, the coordinating, the networking, getting permission and approval from everyone that I felt was necessary and required to get this piece done. And then also bringing in the right people that are trained how to make things like this happen. I did fly one guy in from Philadelphia to help with installing the mural. It's on mural cloth. So material is actually polytab, which is what they use to make parachutes. And then it's primed. And a very high quality printer prints a high res image of my design. After finalizing the illustration, I sent it to the printer in Philadelphia. If you're interested in learning more, the website is called muralprovisions.com. There's a guy named Ben Volta, a wonderful guy that created this method because he wanted an easier way for muralists to do mixed media and have panels that you can paint indoors, which is an amazing game changer for Alaska because I can't be on a lift for 1 to 2 months in Juneau and not get poured out with rain or wind. I certainly don't want to put my body through that. I love that I can have these panels inside my studio. Additionally, I can have apprentices. I had a total of 6. 5 of them helped me paint the mural. So once it was printed on and shipped to me, we did additional layers of paint to add texture and more depth and more blending and color. So when you look at the mural, you'll see very clean lines and bold colors, but then you'll see paint textures and blends that I wanted to add. Also the gold and the iridescent that's in the sun behind her and the iridescent pearl that's in the moon and the stars and a little bit in the water wave highlights are painted in, which you can't necessarily print that on, but you can paint it on. So it added a whole other level of depth and color and light reflection by painting it. So it's mixed media. And after painting them, I brought in Marcus Hines. He is an artist based in Philadelphia. He's been installing murals for other artists for over 10 years. All over Philly, and because I'd never done anything like this before, especially at this scale. If I don't know how to do something, I will find someone who knows how to do it and either have them teach me or convince them to work for me. I called up Marcus. I'm like, hey, you don't know who I am. You've never been to Alaska. You have no idea what this is about, but here's what I'm doing. This is who I am. If you come to Alaska, I'll feed you salmon I caught myself. I'll take you out on my uncle's boat. I'll give you the all Alaskan experience, but you got to work hard and help me get this job done. And it's going to be difficult. it's going to be a race against the rain, the weather. And he was all in for it. So I am so lucky. I'm so glad I met Marcus because I flew him in and I had him and my apprentice, Logan Terry. He's a Tlingit and is another local artist in Juneau. And I had those two guys work to install the mural cloth for me. So Marcus actually trained both Logan and I how to install the mural cloth and how to fully operate that particular lift. It was a win-win because one, Marcus gets the Alaskan experience. He gets to come here and do this installation. He's never been to Alaska. And then two, local artists are now trained in this material and how to install it. There have been some curveballs and challenges that we had to problem solve around. We're now trained in that, and I hope that we can be a resource now for other artists, or I hope that Logan will someday install his own mural, or another artist in the community will want to do this method.
It seemed from the very beginning a race against the rain, and some people who were watching almost felt there was some divine intervention that you got two glorious days of sunshine for this.
Oh my goodness. There were so many crazy things that happened. First, there was COVID and the border of Canada being closed, not be able to bring Lauren in to help. And then there was a flood in Texas, and that's where all the mural adhesive and mural paint is manufactured. Once they were back in business, they were bottlenecked. It was just one of many challenges that I just completely don't have control over. And then the next challenge was getting all my ducks lined in a row, going through all the hurdles that CBJ is like, okay, we have to do this, liability, have to follow the rules. And then finally, when we're ready to make it happen, it's all ready and good to go. It's already September. And we're like, okay, September's cold. The adhesive has to be installed at 50 degrees or higher. And September is like dropping below into the 50s and rain and wind. And I was like, wow, this could be disastrous. I just did a GoFundMe. I have everyone's money to do this project. If it doesn't happen now, it won't happen till next year. And I don't want to hang on to everyone's money for a year. And so I was like, it has to happen now. And so we had this gap of 3 days. And I called Marcus. I said, hey, I know you're not planning to come here for another week, but I need you here now. If you could just get here, I will be so grateful, eternally grateful. And he was like, yeah, okay, I'll make changes to my schedule. I got him here. And what should have taken 5 days, we did in 3 days. Our bodies were broken. Those guys worked so hard, Logan and Marcus, in the sun, in the rain. It was blinding up on the lift, the walls reflecting heat, and I could barely see, and it was hot. But it was amazing because everyone was bringing us iced coffee. People were coming by saying, can I get food? It was just incredible. Everyone that came to help, and I'm so grateful. I have to thank Jay Zeller and Kari Groven at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, because during this past year, I reached out to them for their help in helping planning this mural and helping coordinating people. And oh my goodness, I am so glad I asked for help. It's hard for me to ask for help, but I learned to ask for help, and it is so worth it. I couldn't do it alone. There's absolutely no way.
Well, there's that saying, many hands make light work. I don't know if this was light work, but maybe they took off some of the load for you.
Yeah, write a proposal, helping write a budget, down to delivering juice that helped hydrate my team when we were just dying.
So in that final moment, as the light is fading on the third day that you are working and you are still racing away because rain is right around the corner, a big crowd assembles, there are drums, there are singing. What were you feeling at that moment?
You hit a point where you're so focused and ingrained in your work, and I'm on a timeline and it's supposed to rain at 10 p.m. and I still have hours of work to do after the last panel is put on. So I was just like hardcore focused. Everyone kept coming by that day and asking, when's the ceremony? And I was like, what ceremony? I didn't know, but I was so focused on getting the job done. And so Jackie Peta pulled together a dance group to come and sing, and a bunch of people came through to witness the last panels going up, and it was so cool. I was literally lifted. I was on this lift and I was installing the last panel and listening to our songs. I just, this euphoric feeling. Wow. I don't know if there's words for how I felt in that moment. I just felt so powerful, and I felt so graced and humbled, just so honored. It just felt right. The timing was right. I didn't expect it to happen. I kind of knew something might happen, but I didn't know when. And it was the perfect timing because the last panel was going up. It gave me the last push of energy. You know, like this was the hardest thing I've ever done. And to have clan members swoop in and like sort of cradle me with their songs, gave me the last push of energy I needed to get it done. And then after everyone left, I sort of rode on that energy, and I had to fill in all the crevices that are in that wall. I had to fill it in with adhesive. And so I raced to fill it in before it started raining. Literally the last 5 feet I filled in, I felt a raindrop. So it was just in the nick of time.
Crystal Worrell says her work is not over yet. There are more touch-ups to be done. Sealant needs to be applied to protect the mural. All tasks that are weather permitting. So far, the project has cost about $64,000, paid for by grants and donations from the community. Businesses have also offered their services free of charge. The Rasmussen Foundation, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and the City and Borough of Juneau are among the many partners in the project. So now that she's reached a major milestone in her career, what's next for Crystal Worrell? A solo exhibition show the first Friday of November at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Thanks, everyone, for being here with us. Our guest today was on the ferry yesterday on his way from Gustavus to exhibit his work here in Juneau, and he had his artwork carefully packed. And this week, Lou Cassiopo will be showcasing his carving at an exhibit at V's Cellar Door. Well, Lou, I can imagine that it must be quite a project to do an art exhibit like this one, where you have to pack up your artwork on a ferry.
Yeah, it's definitely labor intensive, excited about doing it, but there was a lot of prep going into it. And of course, when you pack an art, you have to pack it real careful. I have stone sculptures, jewelry, wood, different mediums, and heavy to boot when you got to have stone sculptures. And I have some limited edition prints also that I brought along, but packing was a challenge.
I can imagine that you wouldn't really want anything damaged on the way here. So
no.
Tell us about some of the pieces that you brought with you, you think people will be excited to see.
Well, the name of the exhibit is Sink or Think. And the last few years of the layout of the way the government's been working and people have been behaving has definitely put me in the direction of using my art to speak to other people in an emotional and meaningful way. And I realize that some of my art is a slap in the face, and it's meant to be. It is sometimes difficult to get a message out without first invoking awareness in the public. So I do that through visual arts, music, poetry, and literature. We open avenues, we let in seeds of healthy emotions, the ability to learn and to listen, not just to the louder voices, but to people with many voices of our planet. So listen more than speak loudly.
So what are some of your pieces that have a message? Can you describe them to us?
They're kind of hard to describe. I'll give it a try. One is called I Can't Breathe. It's a wooden sculpture inside of a box with a door on it, American flag on the front. And you open up the little door, and there's the face in it is half Caucasian and half Negro. And that's the way I felt when all this was going on, that I can't breathe. And, you know, and indigenous people, we can't breathe. And this is just a historic events that I have to put down. Otherwise, I don't feel like I'm doing my job as an artist. That's one example.
So what you're saying is we live in a toxic world, and your art is trying to express that?
Yes, it is. A lot of the comments that I've gotten at my gallery this summer, many of them from this particular exhibit in the gallery, which I have many artworks hanging in there, is that it was very thought-provoking. I was thanked for doing it. And I sold a couple of pieces out of that, big pieces. And the people who were in there thanked me really for doing that, for taking my talent and doing this kind of art. It's easy to get stuck into one aspect of art or one medium if money is the only issue, you know, that you are trying to achieve. And I'm way past that. At my age, at 74, I have to go for the heart with my message. And that's what I do.
So tell us a little bit about running a gallery in Gustavus. How has it been for you, especially with the onset of the pandemic?
Well, it's been interesting because I've learned to use negative things in a positive way in my life. And what I decided to do was to, I took a job at the park. Glacier Bay National Park. I was a crew boss of a crew that we did historical restoration, and I got paid very well and loved the people I worked with. And I did that for 3 years, and I took that money, and I don't owe anything on my four buildings and my 2 acres. I built everything myself and paid for it. So I'm in a unique position right now where I made all the money I made, I got to keep and put back into my gallery, which I modified so I have more room to hang. And I've had a very successful summer, regardless of we didn't have the typical tourists, but many people who were visiting, some were from Juneau, independent visitors who were visiting people that live in Gustavus. And a lot of people came back to my gallery bringing their hosts with them. And it was a super successful year, just from the comments alone and the reaction to the artwork.
I guess that as an artist, it's important to get that connection with your public. And in COVID, a lot of artists have kind of been in a vacuum, unless, of course, they've been able to use the internet successfully to put their work out there. How about you? How have you been able to make that connection?
You know, I'd have to say I've been doing art in Alaska for over 50 years. I'm pretty well known in a lot of Southeast Alaska cities. I've had lots of shows in Seattle, California, New York. And so I'm not unknown. I've just have never really pursued being an artist to make money. I've always done art for myself, which is I can't say how rewarding that is. And I am a pretty proficient artist in getting the message out that I want. And of course, my personality leads to, you know, the integrity has left no doubt of my obligation to record history, as many artists have done throughout our existence, as you know. Utilizing my art to record in real time current history events as I see it, you know, is as I see it and feel it, is very important to me.
Well, I'm kind of curious because I noticed from your website that you have a number of Native themed masks, carvings. What was the inspiration for that?
I don't have that many, but I do have several pieces. Well, I was definitely, when I came up to Alaska, overwhelmed by the expertise and the finesse of the totemic design, which was, you know, well, as you well know, it was definitely refined because of the situation of living in Southeast Alaska, but hunting and food gathering wasn't as hard as it was in other regions of, like, you know, let's say up in the mountains in Texas or somewhere. So it was a good life. They refined the art. It was great design, and the indigenous people that I met are friends. Or to me, it was like an Italian family, you know, warm people, caring people, and I just fell in with that group of people. But I never mimicked. I've used elements of totemic art in my art, but I've never done anything near traditional or wanted to, because I'm not going to tread on somebody else's heritage. I don't think that's what I do. I have enough to do for myself.
So have you had any mentorship, any lessons from Native artists? Because definitely I see a Native inspiration in your work.
Yeah, I'm inspired by, you know, the Native art and just Alaska in itself. A lot of my art has to do with becoming a part of the environment or the ecosystem spiritually. I mean, I love ravens. And the only mentor I have a lot of carver friends, but the mentor and friend that was the most influential for me was Jack Hudson, a Simtrian carver from Metlakatla. A renowned teacher and renowned, you know, artist, Native artist. And he didn't have to teach me how to carve, because I was carving when I was in the sixth grade. What he did teach me was how to make tools, because the tools I were using were, like, when I first got up here 50 years ago, were like X-Acto knives, you know, folding knives, my you know, folding knife. And I did some pretty nice work, but he came up to me one day at a show, and he's looking at my stuff, and he goes, "Hey, what are you using to carve those with?" And I said, "I got some X-Acto tools." He goes, "I'm going to teach you how to make tools."
And so, that changed your world, huh?
Rocked my world. I mean, what it did, one thing it did is I'm able to make any kind of tool I want for any kind of work I want to do. And the speed of the work also increased too, you know, with hook knives and adzes. It was like, it was amazing.
Well, I see in your art, as I look at your website, a lot of different influences. I see Asian influences, even sci-fi in the midst of your work. But, you know, in these days and times, you know, it is kind of controversial in many Native communities in Alaska. As more and more Native artists come into their own, there's a lot of talk about cultural appropriation of art. What's your take on that?
Oh, I was 100% right. My art like I said, I do not do traditional Native carving. Probably 1% of my work has any semblance of a totemic symbolism in it is rare. I did one piece that traveled around the state for a year in the museums, and it was a raven, and the raven had a man's head on top of it. And I used totemic, designs on the beak and the raven itself, but the man was a human face, you know, could have been a Michelangelo carving, or with tears coming down in silver, and all kinds of circuits and wires coming down, and my mask was what I meant to do with that piece was to emphasize the clash between tradition and the increasingly ever fast moving world for technology, and how that must be such a determinant for people to find their own heritage in a very confusing and fast paced world. And that's why I did that piece in particular.
Just before we go, can you tell us the particular things we need to know if we want to check out your exhibit at V's Cellar Door?
What you need to know is, when you're looking at the artwork, the titles on them and the artwork itself, both are will get the what it means across. Some people ask me, what does that mean? And I tell them, I can't tell you what it means to me in my heart and my soul, but you tell me what it means to you. And nobody really is ever offbeat, so I know that I'm doing a good job.
All right.
And, I love art, and it's my life and passion.
So we'll get a taste of some of your passion this week at V's Cellar.
Undoubtedly.
So thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with your exhibit, Lou.
Yeah, thank you, and hello to everybody out there.
All right.
Have a good evening.
That was Lou Cacioppo exhibiting at V's Cellar Door. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and welcome back. We're going to be talking about the election season. The League of Women Voters of Juno has a candidates forum coming up tomorrow. And here to give us a preview, we have Kirsha Hughes-Scandes, who is with the League. Well, the League has a long established reputation for nonpartisanship. And how do you maintain this, Kirsha?
Yeah, that's definitely a question that has been coming up. You know, we live right now, our current events are kind of what you would call hyper-partisan. And I think that the way that the League navigates that right now is by focusing on our positions. You know, we never support or oppose any candidate or any party in and of itself. And so really sticking to the issues that we have positions on, you know, advocating for or against them, you know, whatever the case may be. It's just really something that we keep in mind first and foremost. And then, of course, the other big part of our mission is just to educate and engage voters. And so that's easy to do. You know, there's no partisanship there. And that's the beauty part of our local election. The municipal election itself is nonpartisan. You know, people might signal one way or another, but there's no party registration when it comes to assembly or school board.
So a lot of people say, I'm not going to vote because I don't know who these people are. But you've got a forum that's an answer for that. Tell us about that.
Exactly. Yeah, we're trying to take that excuse away. So this forum is kind of the follow-up to the series of questions that we put together for our voter's guide. And it's, you know, just looking at some of the different, it's trying to tease apart what the different candidates might have in terms of their philosophy or their ideas for, you know, what their approach is going to be or issues that are currently facing the assembly and the school board. And this is an opportunity for the town to learn about them. And it also levels the playing field, I think, for the candidates themselves, because even if you haven't, you know, even if you didn't plan out your fundraising strategy and you can't buy radio ads or whatever, it's an opportunity for them to show up and speak directly to the voters.
Now, one of the things you do is you get a lot of partners involved. So who's involved this time around? I know KTOO is one of your partners, but tell us about some of the others.
Yeah, well, so KTOO is huge and we love and appreciate the support that we get there. And then the other big partnership is with the Juno Empire. And so that's nice because, you know, they're reporting as candidates enter the race. They've got those relationships, and it's just another great platform when they publish our voters guide questions. So instead of us, you know, kind of only reaching out to our membership with this information, the Empire's platform or KTOO's platform for the forum is a way to kind of try and make sure that we get as many eyes and ears informed.
So give us the particulars on this forum. How can we watch this online?
So you can watch online on KTOO's YouTube channel. And if you search KTOO on YouTube, it'll pop right up with this year attached to it. And that'll be streaming live and it'll be available after the fact too. So if you've got a commitment that you just can't get out of, you can still watch it. And then it'll also be going out over the airwaves in real time. So that'll be tomorrow at 7 p.m. It'll be airing on KTOO.
So in wrapping things up, you know, the country is in the midst of a big debate over voting rights and access to the polls. Mm-hmm. Just quickly, mm-hmm. What kind of role do you think that the League will take in this, in sorting this issue out?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's definitely something that's very dear to the League's heart, you know, at every level, local, state, and national. We have an official position adopted in favor of, you know, expanding voting rights wherever possible. The VRAA, you know, the For the People Act. These are things that we publicly support and endorse, and, you know, both the League leadership advocates with our representatives, and we also encourage our membership to reach out and engage with their representatives in Congress.
Well, it seems like you've got your work cut out for you as an organization always, but Indeed. Perhaps now more than ever. Well, Keisha, we want to thank you very much for joining us on Juno Afternoon. Thanks for being here to give us a reminder one more time, 7 o'clock.
Yes, I know.
Tomorrow night.
Yep. And if you forget, if you space it, go online. It'll be on YouTube.
All right. Thank you very much, Keisha Hughes-Scandes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks.
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.